Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Not very enthusiastic on the watch and discuss them. What are we doing today? We are covering off a animated to a live action remake again. It is Aladdin from 92 and Aladdin from 2019.
Yeah, it's my first time seeing the remake. And honestly, not as bad as I expected it to be.
Yeah, because there was a lot of criticism when the when the trailer came out for the 2019 movie. Ironically, circling mainly around Will Smith. And he did some, you know, his life sort of took a turn after this movie came out.
I don't think it was necessarily to do with this movie, though.
No, it wasn't related to the movie. It just definitely happened.
Yeah, true. Will Smith made some interesting choices.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that came out in the background of his life that was kind of not really for the public, but they made it public anyway. It was quite a bizarre time. Anyway, I want to sort of focus on the major difference in this movie.
Okay.
Now, there's some fan canon around the original 92 movie.
Okay.
And that fan canon is twofold. The first is the entire thing is a made-up story by the guy trying to sell a vase.
Well, the guy trying to sell, that is the genie.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, spoilers, obviously. Our entire show is spoilers. In the 2019 one, it is him regaling of the story to his own children.
Yeah.
And he is the genie again. And it kind of makes it up that in both of these adaptations, that the story's made up. Because he's regaling his children, like, spoiler alert, Genie becomes a man at the end of it, marries the Princess Jasmine's handmaiden, and gets a ship together and has some children. And it's him singing a story to his children about, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, how he used to be a genie and, and how he was set free.
Yeah, where the other one is just a guy trying to sell you a lamp, shady guy in the night. Setting up his lamps, his vase and lamp stall, allegedly in the town that they are in.
Yeah, I think the theory works for the remake. That he's like, oh, once I was an all-powerful genie, you know, to his kids. I don't think it holds up for the original. Primarily because the canon doesn't stop at one movie.
Correct.
Because you have Return of Jafar, you have, you know, Aladdin and the King of Thieves, you have the whole Aladdin TV series.
True.
You know, and the genie is a big part of all those, and, like, I don't think all of those are just some guy making shit up to tell a, to sell something.
Maybe.
I think that, yeah, also it's more fantastical. But I, you know, there's also more realism in the remake.
Yeah.
You know, and the genie does talk about being able to, you know, make himself look human, to blend in and things, and doesn't do as much overtly fantastical or magical things in front of people. To not blow, you know, Prince Ali's cover.
Yeah.
But it definitely, yeah, there's definitely an argument that could be made that he has, that it's just a story he's invented for his kids, because that's the bookend of it.
Yeah. The other interesting sort of fan theory in regards to the 92 one is because the genie, obviously they're like little tidbits here and there and they're just little funny jokes, but they're introducing into things that are happening, well, from now, from the 92 point of view, in our past.
Yeah.
But no one ever sort of questions any of it within the universe of the movie. So the fan theory is it is not something that happened in the past. And there's a lot of things that Jeannie says that doesn't make a lot of sense if it's set in a time of, like, what, six... Like, it'd be very hard to pinpoint when it's supposed to be set, right? Yeah. For a long time, the Middle East was very much the head of the academic world. It is, you know, there was many of the cradles of civilization happened in the Middle East. So the fan theory states that it is not in the past, it is in fact in the future. And that will also explain the magic carpet being some form of actual technology, the highly, very intellectually smart, very capable animals may have been genetic engineering, the fact that the genie makes references to things like cars and Jack Nicholson, stating that he'd been trapped in the lamp for 10,000 years, the fact that the genie and the magic carpet know each other, and it is just a the culture that it survived was the Middle Eastern culture, and that is very, very, very interesting in the live-action remake, because it is not exclusively what we would describe as Middle Eastern culture, which are very reserved. There are a lot of control, like especially with the Islamic Revolution. There is a lot of containment around education and things like that, which is unfortunate, but it is part of their religion and culture. But there is a lot of almost Indian style dancing and big. It very much reminds me of a Bollywood movie in certain sequences. And it does feel there's a blending of culture here, which is plausible, but it is far more fun to think that it is not in the past, but in fact a distant future.
Yeah.
Where climate change has done something so terrible, or it could have been war, it could have been a million things, but it is in fact like sort of very Planet of the Apes-esque, where it is in the future, and that's how the genie, who was possibly a you know, some form of nanotech, because of his ability to change things and metamorph things. And, you know, we say it's magic, but, you know, it doesn't explain turning a boo into a car, doesn't explain him making Jack Nicholson references. It's very fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun little fan theory.
This one works the opposite way, because in the remake, in the live-action version, they have, although they have continued to set it in the fictional country of Agrabah, they do very much stick to a time period. It's 15th century, and they use, like, you know, costuming and culture and stuff from that era. Though they do obviously blend, you know, a few different Middle Eastern cultures together to create this new fictional area. Whereas I guess in the original, it's much easier to argue that, like, oh, you know, here, especially with the genie making all those references, which he doesn't do in the remake. But, I mean, you could just as easily argue that the genie being all-powerful also has, like, a vast wealth of knowledge of everything. Like, so he knows everything that's going to happen. But then why would he be surprised by things?
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to... to figure out how the genie gets the knowledge that he has.
Sure.
But it is very... And in both movies, there is an element of the genie playing to the audience more than he's playing to Aladdin at times.
Correct.
He does, like, a Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing.
That was very bizarre.
In the remake, where he rewinds to watch and then, like, turns back to the audience, like, oh, never mind, he did do this.
Yeah.
Whereas in... you know, so there is an element of him that is this kind of meta, you know, all-knowingness. And, you know, in the original, that is largely Robin Williams. Well, I mean, honestly, it comes from Robin Williams improvising.
Correct.
They had 16 hours of Robin Williams improv.
Just saying stuff.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it was, genuinely, 16 hours. Yeah, 16 hours of material of Robin Williams just improv. In that, can you imagine that? There's, like, I mean, they must still have that on record somewhere.
Maybe.
Just 16 hours of Robin Williams improvising as the genie.
You mentioned this in a previous episode, or it may have been in person. Wasn't that one of the issues with another movie he did because he kept improvising lines so often? I remember you saying
we've talked about him. I feel like as the because we did two Robin Williams movies in one episode before, because we did The Birdcage and Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah,
it might have been one of those, possibly. But in this one, they like for Aladdin, they really wanted the genie, or they really wanted Robin Williams to play the genie, to the point that, like, when they went to pitch it to him, Eric Goldberg, who animated the genie, who I've met in person, so I've heard the story from him, which is great. He got like a ton of Robin Williams stand up. And used that audio and animated the genie doing Robin Williams stand-up. So when they pitched to Robin Williams that they wanted him to play the genie, they played for him a whole lot of, like, fully animated Robin Williams stand-up done by the genie. To be like, this is the character, and this is what we want him to be, and we want him to be you, and we want him to have this flavor to him. So he definitely didn't get in trouble for improvising on this film.
Right.
But definitely it's been, he is someone who's well known. I think it probably was The Birdcage, because I think Nathan Lane is also famous for improv. Yeah. So the two of them would just improv off each other all the time. And it sounds like if Robin Williams and Gilbert Gottfried had been together for the recording of Aladdin, they would have done the same thing, because they have previously done stand-up together.
Yeah.
But they never got to record together, though they did, like, both, you know, crack up laughing at each other's improv lines when they heard them. But I don't think there's quite as much Gilbert Gottfried improv in Aladdin as there is Robin Williams. But yeah, so they did film, or they did, like, animate, you know, the genie doing just his general stand-up routine. To be like, please, we want you to pay this. But if we want to go into that now, there was a huge falling out between Disney and Robin Williams because of this movie.
Why is that?
So he didn't really want to do the movie initially because he didn't want to be involved with Disney and their kind of capitalist, you know, monopoly they have. And he didn't want to be involved in something that was a movie being made to create merchandise to sell to kids.
Right.
So he took a union rate. So he basically, you know, essentially minimum wage for actors. In his contract said he was only doing the film on the condition that they would never use his voice for any merchandise.
Right.
Which they obviously did not adhere to. I think I did take some details about it. Yeah. So, and that the genie doesn't take up more than 25% on any poster, ad, billboard, or trailer. And then they went against that. And he withdrew his support for Disney. He wouldn't promote the film. His name isn't included in the Art of Aladdin book because he wouldn't let them put his name in there. So, like, they regularly refer to the voice of the genie, but not they cannot name him. That's why he didn't come back for Return of Jafar. That's why he didn't come back for the Aladdin TV series. You know, it's all done by Dan Castellaneta, who plays Homer Simpson. He would not, as you know, he does come back for The King of Thieves, the third film. They apologized to him. They gave him an original Pablo Picasso painting to apologize. And he was so insulted and angry at Disney that he wouldn't accept it.
It kind of did literally doubling down. It's like, I don't like you because
because of your capitalist
ideals.
It's and then they're like, well, here's a Pablo Picasso for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, here's a priceless painting for an apology. It's like, you're literally proving my point.
So he only made peace with Disney and came back for King of Thieves after Jeffrey Katzenberg, the chairman of Disney, was fired.
Right.
So he genuinely held out until Jeffrey Katzenberg was fired. And we did talk about this before, because Jeffrey Katzenberg also, at the same time Aladdin was being... So at the same time Aladdin was being made, Robin Williams was also recording Ferngully.
Right.
And Jeffrey Katzenberg had a go at him over that. And he was like, uh-uh. So they already had come to, you know, had an argument, and then it got worse when when Disney didn't actually uphold his wishes, you know, that he did it on this like small salary, so that he could be like, well, yeah, I'll take this small salary, and you just don't use my voice for anything. But also apparently they were already making King of Thieves when Jeffrey Katzenberg was fired. So they had already recorded loads of sessions with Dan Castellaneta, and then when Robin Williams was like, okay, well, Jeffrey Katzenberg is gone, sure, I'll do it. And they just scrapped all of the recordings that Dan Castellaneta had done. So I feel bad for him in terms of that. But yeah, weird. He was filmed most of his scene, or he recorded audio for most of his scenes for this, in between, on filming breaks, so like between filming, on Hook and Toys.
Wow.
So he was doing
Toys,
like...
is a bizarre movie.
So I love that he did Ferngully and Aladdin back to back, but he also did it like in, you know, did his voice recordings in between filming Hook and filming Toys. It was like he was just trying to do... He obviously at that point was really trying to do films for his kids to watch, because I think he'd done mostly kind of adult comedy stuff before then. So it's funny that he just like four movies almost at the same time that he was doing. But we've gone on a whole side tangent there about Robin Williams.
It's fine. He's missed infinitely.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something controversial.
Okay.
I actually kind of really enjoyed the remake.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't as bad as I expected. I thought it was going to be bad.
Yeah.
And also, you know, and I thought Arabian Nights was okay. I don't think Will Smith did a good job singing Friend Like Me. But then again, that song really, really suited Robin Williams. And it's very hard to hear it without him.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit worried at that point. But then I thought Prince Ali, which is the next song the genie sings, actually really suited Will Smith's style. And then from there I was like, okay, you know, this actually isn't bad.
There is a time that has now passed. I think it was very popular in sort of when I was growing up. I don't really think about it these days.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of movies get a lot of, what's a nice way of putting it? If a movie has too much music in it, I feel like Suicide Squad was a very good example of that. A lot of people criticize movies for being just music videos.
Right.
You know, you go into an action sequence and they just play a song, and then the song ends, but it's been heavily edited down so it all mixes up all with the action. And then the song ends and the scene ends. And Suicide Squad, you know, the story of the villains from DC Universe, you know, joining together and saving the world, for those who don't follow DC. There was a lot of criticism to the Suicide Squad movie when that came out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with musicals in general, you obviously you're getting a pass because the whole point is part of the thing being a musical.
Yeah.
But there's a weird middle part of that, which is when, and it is mainly revolved around, I would say, Will Smith, is whenever Will Smith used to star in a big movie, he also do the music for it, which would then go into the box office, Billboard charts.
Right.
And, like, I still remember song from Men in Black when he was co-starring along with Tommy Lee Jones. The Wild Wild West movie where he sings the whole thing about that. And I felt sort of maybe it's like nostalgia a little bit of having Will Smith again singing what was happening. And it was like, oh, okay, like, putting artist away, putting the art away from the artist kind of works in this situation, because obviously a lot of stuff happened in the last couple of years after this movie came out. Yeah, I genuinely can't be like, I dislike this movie. Mm. There is nothing, like, all of the acting, the casting's really good. You know, the guy who plays, I can't remember his name, apologies. The guy who plays Aladdin is Egyptian, but he grew up in Canada.
Yeah, they did really good casting, and they did, it was, the movie was delayed for a while.
Mina Masood.
And they had Naomi Scott playing Jasmine. She's been in more things, I think.
Yeah, I was looking her up before we watched the movies with her little, like, Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
I think I watched Terra Nova. I'm pretty sure I watched some Terra Nova. I haven't seen this 2017 Power Rangers movie. I probably should at some point. But she's obviously not Caucasian as well. And I think that worked really well for the setting, because it's not, like, I think that's probably been the biggest hang-up for a lot of people when they're doing live-action remakes of Disney movies, is they're just casting people that don't sit the roles.
Yeah, and this is what I was going to say, is that the movie was actually delayed quite a bit because they were so determined to get the right casting.
Yeah.
Which I think is good. And it's funny because there's been criticism around the original movie in terms of casting, that it was, you know, largely white Americans.
It's true.
Doing the voices, and also that there was a huge criticism around the design of the good characters versus the evil characters.
Yeah.
And I think to an extent I can see it, but also I don't think it's as deep as people are putting it, saying it, because the thought was that, you know, Aladdin, Jasmine, the Sultan are people with, like, Caucasian features who are just tanned,
yeah,
and then, you know, the evil characters are like caricatures of Middle Eastern people. I don't think it's necessarily that. I think to a large extent it's just a classic Disney thing of making your protagonists or your good characters very, like, soft featured, and putting lots of angles in the villains.
Correct.
And it just so happens that when you do that in this setting, you're making, you know, you're making a statement that you don't want to make. So I appreciate that they did really go to the trouble of getting actors of the right ethnicities or people from that area.
Because
I was surprised, I didn't know her name, because her name is Nassim Pedrad, who is an actress who I've seen in, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine and New Girl and, you know, like, American sitcoms, and I didn't realize she's actually from Iran. So I was like, oh, okay, that's, you know, that kind of does explain why she's cast in it. But yeah, so they really made an effort to get people who really fit that, you know, the culture they were creating, because, like we've discussed, it's not actually, you know, from a particular country. But we talked about this with the Mulan remake as well, that, you know, people got really upset in advance of Mulan being released, that they were like, oh, you know, all, you know, it's all American actors and things in the original, though actually there's quite a few Asian American actors in the original.
Yeah.
And they did go out of their way to make sure that they had, you know, an Asian cast, and who, you know, and primarily a Chinese cast, who did actually also fit the characters. And I think they did a good job in this one as well, in Aladdin, with the casting.
Yeah, they did a good job. I don't feel that has carried on. There's been, you know, I it's judging book without watching the movie. I haven't seen The Last Mermaid. I haven't seen the newest one, which is it Snow White? It's just releasing now.
Yeah. I mean, we'll watch these as part of the podcast. At some point.
Eventually.
The other one
there's been
is
a lot of controversy around the casting in those movies as well.
Well, my understanding is, we won't go deep into it because I haven't researched this and we're not going to watch it.
Yeah.
My understanding is people were annoyed that they made Ariel a mermaid of color, I guess, in The Little Mermaid. But my understanding is that while the original is set, you know, off the coast of Denmark, like the book was, they've relocated it in the remake to be in the Caribbean, in which case it kind of makes more sense, potentially.
So but it's we'll see. Now just Pirates 4?
Yeah. Pirates 7?
Yeah.
So we'll look into that more when we come around to that movie, but I think they did, from what I understand, they did provide, you know, an explanation in universe, which also explains why they all have American accents probably as well, right, rather than being Dutch.
It's very funny to me because that whole statement is, you haven't seen The Patriot, right?
No.
Okay. So, the people in the movie who are Americans who are fighting for revolution against the king in England all speak with American accents.
Right.
And the British people who are there all speak with what we would describe as like Harry Potter-esque British accents.
Right.
They all would have sounded the same because they hadn't been that much time.
they hadn't had the revolution
yet.
That's funny.
It was very funny to me. Because, you're saying American, like, American accents as well. Well, like, America was a melting pot colonial country. Like, it just would have depended on where people came from.
I will say that the remake of Aladdin has done exactly what Moana did, which is that, like, pretty much entirely people of the right, you know, from the area, the melting pot area that they're trying to create. Because obviously Moana is set on a Pacific island, but they've got, you know, actors from Aotearoa, from Samoa, from, you know, a lot of different areas in the Pacific. And then one white person who is Alan Tudyk playing a bird. And Aladdin has got mainly people from the Middle East and one white person who is Alan Tudyk playing a bird. Because he does play Iago in the remake. And that's just going to be his legacy from now on, I guess. He gets to be the single white guy playing a bird in a Disney movie.
It was very funny because we've seen that background where he was filming lines for Moana.
Yeah. He's doing like chicken noises and he goes, "I went to Juilliard." I love Alan Tudyk so much. It's also a reunion. As people know, we have done an episode on iRobot before, which was Will Smith doing a live action role with Alan Tudyk doing a voice role, and here they are again back together. I feel like he did a good Iago. Obviously Iago was quite different
with Gilbert Godfrey.
And I guess it's a part of the trying to make things slightly more realistic, so they do still have Iago able to talk more than you would expect a parrot to talk, but he's not like throwing tantrums like Iago
or holding down the Sultan and feeding him crackers.
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder if they're going to put that scene in the movie.
Well, they changed the Sultan's whole character. Because the Sultan in the original is like
the happy-go-lucky sort of idiot.
Yeah, very
comic relief.
Very naive, comic relief, you know, cute little Sultan.
Yeah, tiny man.
And you kind of wonder, like, how he's even ruling this place.
Yeah.
And in the remake, he's more realistic as a leader, there has to be a balance, because also you, like, if he, you know, he has to still be someone who's going to trust Jafar for some reason.
Some form of hypnosis Jafar's using could be nanotech, quantum mechanics, all that jazz.
Sorcery
is some form of technology. It's no dissimilar from magic if you don't understand it. If you handed somebody from the 15th century a cell phone, they would be thinking you were a sorcerer too.
They all just do it how Mysterio does it in Far From Home.
Yeah.
It's all just drones.
Drones
showing off special
CGI
effects.
Yeah. The thing that I did like more than the 92 in the adaptation,
oh, yeah?
The newest one, was the fact that there's an explanation given outright rather than like, oh, guessing about it or going into deep dive into lore or watching other movies of why the Sultan is one, so protective of Jasmine.
Yeah.
And two, very, very concerned about the future of his own kingdom.
Right.
Which is, it feels just, the 92 animated is just Jasmine in the beginning of the movie, because as the show goes on with the additional movies and the TV show, she goes from the damsel in distress archetype MacGuffin character to a fully developed character later on.
Here's the thing. I actually thought in their introduction, in their introductory scenes, the Jasmine in the remake seemed more like a damsel in distress than the Jasmine in the original. I think it changed later on in the movies, but in the beginning, you know, when Jasmine goes to the marketplace or whatever, and she doesn't quite understand how things work, and she does accidentally steal something, and Aladdin has to, you know, get her out of that situation. But in the original, she then is very, like, is quite, you know, agile or whatever, and willing to really just try stuff, because she wants to be out there being free. And, you know, Aladdin tries to show her how to do a jump thing, and she just does it. She's like, you mean like that? And he's like, wow. Whereas in the remake, he just is like, yeah, come on, let's go. And then she hesitates, and he's like, oh, okay, I've got to, like, talk her through this. And then she, like, lands on his lap, and it's, you know, it's really... It felt really condescending to me. I was like, oh, cool, she doesn't even get to have the confidence that she has. But then, you know, later on in the film, she does, you know, become more fleshed out character in the remake. But I didn't feel like she was damsel-y in the original.
I just feel like it was the original, like, the original archetype is just the male character goes, has to save her, but it's usually the, you know, it's a very much... Princess in the Tower kind of thing, where he's saving her from herself in this situation. But going into the live action one, you've got the fact that the Sultan's concerned about their alliances, the fact that Jafar's like feeding him, you know, little like a very Grima worm tongue of like, no, we should invade our neighbors, and it's like, why would we invade our neighbors? It's like, yeah, why would we invade our neighbors? And talking about the fact that the things that Jasmine learned from her mother, which was caring about the common people, and, you know, they are only as successful as the... Because I think that's in the original. Was it in the original where she says the kingdom is only as happy as the poorest subject?
I don't know if it's in the original. It's definitely in the remake she says something like that, yeah.
So you're sort of going on the guides of, like, her mother... was a really, really good ruler and really helped out with the kingdom and was really focused on making the common people, you know, succeed.
Yeah.
And then with her loss and her death, the Sultan is therefore very closed off. He's more concerned about the future of the kingdom rather than his own daughter's future.
Yeah.
But then sort of combining those two things together, and I think that's where he's let Jafar into his inner circle, because he's afraid of losing his kingdom, which is just a proxy for his daughter. And that's why all these princes keep coming to town and showing off, and he's all like, oh, you should at least get to know one of them.
Yeah.
They've got a great kingdom, you know, they'll be able to protect us. And it's like, yeah, you don't care about me, you have blended these two things together.
Yeah, they talk about, like, the trade and things, and, yeah. The other thing that I think the remake did really well was explain a bit of Jafar's backstory.
Yeah.
Because in the original, Jafar is just evil. And I mean, that happens in a lot of Disney movies.
Yeah, yeah.
The bad guy's just there to be bad.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, in the original, there's also the kind of almost plot hole where, like, you know, Jafar is in disguise when he talks to Aladdin and sends him to the thing. And then how does Aladdin know that he's the bad guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas in the remake, Aladdin knows that he's the bad guy, and Genie is able to recognize and go like, oh, that's the guy who sent you after the lamp.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Jafar meets Aladdin in, you know, as himself to send him into the Cave of Wonders, and he tells him that he used to be a thief himself, yeah. and he demonstrates it for him. They did like a pickpocketing thing. That he set his sights on bigger things, and he's like, why steal, you know, trinkets when you can steal a kingdom? Yeah. And then there's that whole, you know, aspect to him, and you're like, oh, okay, this is just a thief who has, like, you know, just wants higher and higher levels of power, which is kind of what he is in the original as well, but he doesn't seem to do anything for himself in the original.
Yeah.
Whereas the remake, like, you're like, this is a guy who has worked up from the bottom to where he is, and he is desperate to hold on to that power and to get more. Because he doesn't want to go back down.
And it is very much that moment where the crew, at the darkest moment, actually use his own sort of mantra of, if you're not the most powerful person in the room, you're nobody.
Yes.
Literally against him. And that is, you know, he's come up with this own idea that if you're not, you know, if you're not Sultan, you're nobody.
Yeah.
You know, being number two, being the advisor, is not enough.
Yeah.
And it's very sick because it's literally his, you know, he made it all the way to being... He wasn't born into that life. He earned his position as being advisor.
I mean, it sounds like he cheated his way up, but he worked his way up step by step.
You know, and it is very much, regardless of that, like if you look at history and people who have also done that, and the history of the fall of Russia and World War One and Rasputin, being a disco hit, but still terrible person.
Yeah.
It's very much along the lines of using his own insecurities against him to save the day, which is kind of like, you know, it's good writing, but it's also very sad.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I think that's a lot of villains that like, because there is that whole mantra, and I think it works very well in this film, of, you know, every villain is the protagonist in their own story.
Yeah.
And Jafar definitely sees himself as the main character.
Yeah.
And, you know, his insecurity about being second best, and his own kind of hubris allows him to be tricked into, you know, wishing to become... But he didn't even wish to become a genie in that one. He just wishes to become the most powerful being.
Yeah.
But the remake does the... You know, the traditional genie, like, there are loopholes, which is funny because I, you know, I always get annoyed at in the original where Aladdin says, I wish for you to make me a prince. It's like, you know, in any other genie story, that's just he makes a prince. And it's like, here you go, I made you a prince.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Whereas, you know, in this one, the genie's like, you got to word it carefully because I could just do this, blah, 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 blah. But also he kind of gives Aladdin some wiggle room because he wants him to succeed. But then he, you know, when he gets the opportunity to use the loopholes against Jafar, of course he's going to take it.
It's interesting because, like, something I brought up while we were watching the remake was... It had been very confusing for everybody else who's not involved with, like, the main core group. Because if you were just a regular citizen of Agrabah...
Yeah, I said this, not you.
You said this. It doesn't matter who said it, but somebody said it. Doesn't make it not less good. It would have been very, very confusing from the regular citizens of Agrabah, where you have this prince who's come out of nowhere, marches into town, massive display, and not of just wealth, but of just, like, charisma and entertainment and, you know, getting the common man to enjoy it and not just be, like, with the other ones, where the last prince who rolled into town is, like, literally threatening children. Well, not the prince, but, like, the entourage of the prince is threatening children. This one, there's fireworks and animals and all sorts of craziness that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then inexplicably, they all just disappear.
Yeah, all the people just disappear.
Yeah.
And then the princess is, like, coming out and talking to the, you know, Aladdin, the kid from down the street that everyone knows has no money. And she, like... kisses him on the street or whatever in the remake, you're just like, what? But then, like, what's happening? Because they also explain in the remake that, like, the genie, you know, the genie wish cast kind of an illusion over him so that people can't recognize him, which explains then why Jafar doesn't recognize him as Ali, whereas in, you know, the original, he's just wearing different clothes, and they're just like, oh yeah, this fancy guy couldn't possibly be Aladdin.
Yeah, to the point where they both use the same, oh no, I pretended to be a street rat to find out how your city ran.
Yeah, but that's because in both versions, Jasmine is the only person smart enough to figure out that he's, you know, that he is Aladdin, and then gets annoyed that he tricked her, and then he's like, and then he just lies to her even more.
Yeah, classic mean.
I don't know. I mean, it's got a good message in that it's saying, like, actually, things are better when you stop lying and just be yourself.
Yeah.
Which is true, kids.
Yeah.
You just be yourself and don't lie to people. If you lie to people to make them like you, they don't really like you.
Yeah.
They like the lie. And you can't keep that up.
Yeah. Again, in this movie, both these movies, Aladdin is more focused on the fact that Jasmine can't marry anybody except a prince, so therefore he has to become a prince to marry her.
But he forgets that she already liked him
for
who he was. He can't, but again, it's about insecurity.
Yeah.
You know, we learn a lot about Jafar's insecurity, we also learn about Aladdin's insecurity, that he sees himself, you know, as much as he tries to, you know, put out this charisma and be like, you know, I'm getting by and I'm singing my little song. He does feel like, because he has no money, he has nothing to offer, and he has no worth, and that's not true. You don't have to have money to be of value.
Anything else you want to cover off?
I don't know. We talked enough about the movies?
I think so. Okay. Like I said, like what we both said is, like, I went into this with neither of us had seen the 2019 movie.
Yeah.
We both saw what happened at the Oscars. You know, and that sort of really put a real sort of kind of moment when anything with Will Smith comes involved.
Yeah. And also, I just hadn't really heard anything good about this movie.
Yeah,
but it's quite enjoyable.
Yeah. The I would watch it again.
Yeah, I think there's some rough introductions to characters.
Yeah.
I think the genie isn't introduced well. I think Jasmine isn't introduced well.
Yeah.
I don't know if Aladdin necessarily is introduced well. I feel like he's introduced, but all three of those characters certainly are introduced better in the original.
Yeah.
And in the original, like, it's, you know, larger than life introductions, and, you know, these characters, you see their confidence, you see their charisma, you see their, you know, how they play against each other. Which is missing a little bit from the remake. But after Friend Like Me, the movie is good.
Yeah.
Everything from that point onwards, pretty good, actually. So you just gotta bear with it a little bit to that point. And I think it doesn't take a lot to bear with it to that point. Like, I think it's still decent, it's just not great. And then once you get past that kind of awkward intro section where they're almost trying too much to mimic
the original. The animated movie. Yeah.
Which is something that we've seen before in remake. I think the Pinocchio one in particular, where, like, they're just trying to do scene for scene, this is how it is.
Yeah.
And they do change it up a bit in this, even in those beginning sections, but some of the moments where they're trying to match what happened in the original is awkward. And then it's when they kind of just, like, turn it into a movie in its own right, and there's still some things the same, but there's a lot of differences.
Yeah.
That it becomes a much better film, and, you know, much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
You want to get into some trivia?
Sure.
Lovely. We already talked a lot about my trivia from the 1982 Aladdin. Here's the thing. So originally, Jafar was written to be very hot-tempered, and Iago was going to be like a cool, haughty British-type character.
Right.
But then they felt that Jafar losing his temper all the time made him less menacing as a character, so they switched the two personalities, which is how we ended up with our very, very hot-tempered, angry Iago.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart was offered the role of Jafar.
Oh. Interesting.
And he had to turn it down because of scheduling conflicts with Star Trek The Next Generation.
Makes sense.
And he has said in interviews since that it is his biggest regret in his career.
Right.
But also, I'll skip to some trivia for the other movie, because Sir Patrick Stewart campaigned to be cast as Jafar in the remake because he still felt that he regretted not taking the original. Obviously, they didn't cast him, but I think it was more to do with them trying to get, you know, actors of the right ethnicity than anything else. But I love that, like, you know, almost 30 years later, he's like, no, please, please, I regretted it so much last time not doing this. Please give me the role of Jafar. We talked about all this Robin Williams stuff. So originally, this is something I didn't know about Aladdin, which is fun. I like learning new things about Disney movies I didn't already know. In the original script, it was set in Baghdad, right, in Iraq.
You're right.
And then Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, and the Gulf War started. And they were like, I don't think we should set this in Iraq anymore. And that's when they created the fictional city of Agrabah.
Because the three stories are from, like, Arabian folktales.
Is it called A Thousand Arabian Tales?
A Thousand Nights? Yeah.
Yeah.
1001 nights.
1001 nights. Yeah. So the stories, and actually, I didn't take this down, but originally, so most of the story of Aladdin is based on 1001 nights, but there is actually an original story called Aladdin.
Yeah.
And that's set in China. That's a Chinese story.
Okay.
So it's interesting that, you know, they opted to change that to, like, combine those, kind of. And then this is a bit of trivia that will be interesting to one person, who I don't know if he even listens to our podcast, but other family members do. So can you guys tell my older brother about this one? Which is that Andreas Deja, who animated Jafar, based Jafar on the original designs for Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty. Maleficent originally, and this is particularly interesting because I've been to the Art of Disney exhibition that's currently happening in Wellington at the moment, and I specifically took pictures of the original designs of Maleficent to send to my brother because his favorite villains are Maleficent and Jafar. And the original Maleficent designs, she's wearing black and red instead of the, like, greens and purples that she's known for in the Sleeping Beauty movie.
Right.
So it's, you know, they both use a staff that they use to do, you know, to do their magic. They both have a bird they have because she's got the raven on her shoulder. They both turn themselves into giant reptiles in the movie. You know, and she was originally in this black and red design, and then Andreas Deja took that and incorporated that into his design for Jafar. So I thought that was interesting. And I just thought it was fun that my older brother's two favorite Disney villains are Jafar and Maleficent, and turns out Jafar was designed based on Maleficent. Frank Welker is in the remake. He voices... So there's actually two bits of trivia around Frank Welker. One is that the original 1992 Aladdin is one of only two Disney animated films, where he has a speaking role, because Frank Welker is known for being just animal noises in a lot of Disney films and a lot of other films, and Fred Jones in Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But he... While he does voice Abu and does, like, the monkey noises, he also voiced the Cave of Wonders in the original.
Yeah.
And he voiced the Cave of Wonders in the 2019 version, which means he's the first cast member from a Disney animated feature to play the same character in the live-action remake.
Wow.
So I thought that was cool. The production designer Gemma Jackson got her inspiration from a lot of different... cultures. So she took inspiration from Moroccan, Persian, Turkish cultures, and Victorian paintings and Isnik ceramics for the design of Agrabah.
Right.
So it really is like a mishmash of different cultures, and like I said, all from around the 15th century. And in the scene where Aladdin is sneaking into the palace, I had put in my notes that he was doing some parkour, but it turns out what he was actually doing are moves from Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, the video game. So they just, all of the moves he does trying to, when he's sneaking in the palace and he's like creeping across the roof and doing tumbles and things, is they're all moves that you can do as the main character in Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, which is a video game from 2003. Based on an earlier video game where the villain's name was Jafar.
Yeah, and then a terrible movie with Jake Gyllenhaal playing. Yeah,
I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah.
And then the last bit of thing here I had was that Guy Ritchie mainly was interested in doing the film because he wanted to do a film that his kids could watch. So this is his only PG film that he's ever done.
Correct.
But he was primarily interested in Aladdin because he thought it was the Disney story that was most closely related to the kinds of films he makes.
Yes.
So he says he makes stories about street hustlers. That's what he knows how to do. And Aladdin is the classic street hustler who makes good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I thought that was fun. Do you want to talk about budget and box office at all?
Aladdin 92 was the highest grossing movie of that year, which, and then beat out the previous release from Disney, which was Lion King?
No, other way around.
Lion King beat it.
Aladdin set a whole lot of records, and then the Lion King just push all those records into the ground when it was released 2 years later.
Because Aladdin cost like 20-something million dollars and made like 500 and something.
So it cost $28 million and it made $504 million.
And I'm pretty sure this version of Aladdin's made over $1 billion.
Yep, correct. It has made over $1 billion. And it cost $183 million.
That's not terrible.
Yeah.
For like what we got on screen, because I've seen higher budget movies that look a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, it does look really good. And obviously they put a lot of effort into production design, costuming. The costuming is amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that, but the costuming is like just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, because they've obviously again combined all these cultures. They've tried to, you know, make costumes that are culturally appropriate to the time period and the culture that they're representing.
Yeah.
While also, you know, paying homage to the designs of the original film. You know, Jasmine does at one point wear something similar to what she, what is her kind of iconic outfit in the original, but like much more
elaborate.
Yeah, and more like the costumes of, you know, or the outfits of that kind of culture. So it's they made a huge effort with costume design, with production design.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, really impressive, I thought, and I'd say probably, you know, maybe more budget went on that than special effects, because there's actually not a lot in the way of special effects.
Yeah, it's mainly just around, it would be a lot around, like, removing wire work and safety precautions with doing stunts.
Yeah, and I mean, because even the
just genie
the genie, like, only looks like a genie and, like, is only, like, VFX, like, right towards the beginning of it, mostly. And then I'd say, you know, most of the VX budget probably goes in the one scene where Jafar is a sorcerer and is changing all the things and causing storms and teleporting Aladdin away and stuff like that, you know. And I guess the carpet.
Yeah.
But like a lot of it is practical.
Yeah.
And they do make the genie just be Will Smith in a costume for a significant portion, which, you know, makes sense in terms of the story, in terms of him not giving away that Aladdin has a genie.
Yeah.
But also probably made him a lot cheaper to make. And they did, it was a set, I believe. I didn't take that down, but I did look at it. It was because they had thought about filming on location somewhere, and then they really wanted to stick with the idea of it being a fictional place and not making it look like, you know, this is a particular city in this particular country or whatever. So it is all sets in the end.
Cool.
But pretty elaborate sets. I mean, because that probably took up a chunk of the budget as well. Anyway, I think worth a watch.
Yeah, definitely. I was genuinely surprised because I was expecting just an awful movie that was just shot by shot remake with no
it's funny
passion and love put into it because it was already there.
Yeah, and when we looked at it, like, because we watched the original first, and it's an hour and 30 minutes, and then we looked at the remake is 2 hours, 7 minutes, and I was like, what, you know, I literally said, what could they possibly have put in to take up another 37 minutes? But actually what they've put in is more realism, more background for the characters, making it a more well-rounded story. And I think it actually worked really well.
Yeah.
So
I was pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was expecting a bad film.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that that's not what we got. And the good news is, what we have been doing is, with our Disney remakes episodes, is we've been going from the largest gap to the smallest gap, which means, you know, supposedly, though I guess other remakes are being released in the meantime, will be slotted in.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, as far as the current lineup is, they're supposed to just get better from here.
Right.
So that's good. We will report back to you because we're doing another Disney remake as our next episode, and we can tell you if that one actually is any better than this one. But I genuinely was pleasantly surprised, and I actually really enjoyed watching both these movies.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to us talk about them. Thank you for joining us on this episode of It Takes Two. If you like what you heard, or this is your first episode, I don't know why you'd stuck pitch here, but that's fine.
Popular movies.
Exactly. If you want to hear more from us, you go to our website, ittakes2.co.nz.
Yep.
And if you want to interact with us, you are available to do that on our YouTube channel or on our Discord.
Yes. And if you like this episode, or if you've listened to other episodes and you like them, please share them with someone. Just share an episode with a friend.
Or fly to Antarctica and download it there.
Yes,
because it's the only continent we haven't been listened to.
Do still want to get listened to in Antarctica.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.